You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
We gave a very big stage to Russia, and we got nothing. We gave up something that was unbelievably valuable. I stopped the pipeline, Nord Stream, and that pipeline was stopped, and it was given back, and nothing was gotten for it. And it was it was another day. And performance art, you'll take a look at how various people performed. Namely, the two people, and you have to form your own judgment. It's not for me to say, but I will say that I think it was a good day for Russia. I don't see what we got out of it.
I don't either. Those are the words of former President Trump appearing on the Hannity program last night. This is June 17, 2021. And, of course, former President Trump evaluating, in his opinion, the meeting between Biden and Putin. Oh, I'm sure the left says, oh, he's totally wrong. He's drinking something that he shouldn't be drinking. Probably the hydroxychloroquine has gotten to his head again. But he's right on point. Biden went in with nothing to really hold Russia accountable. If he had held off on approving that Nord Stream pipeline, which he shouldn't give anyway, but held off, said, if you want this, you're going to have to step forward. You're going to have to shut down this hacking. And if it ever happens again, you got options. You got to play some. This is like playing poker, my friend, and this I can tell you about. If you put everything that you've got in your hand face up, whether your opponent can see it, you're going to lose every single time. Or if you win, you're not going to get much because they're not going to pay that off. This is the way Biden went into this meeting with the Russian Premier President Putin. And Trump is right. We got nothing out of it. And performance-wise, it's gauged first in the sense that after the session, Biden refused to have a joint news conference. Putin wanted one. Why? Well, because he knew I can show up, Biden. So Biden has his own news conference, and that's another farce. We're going to break some of that down because I've told you before, and Biden has kind of admitted to it previously. He did it again. Okay, I'm going to call on some reporters, but let me check my list here. I can only call the ones on this list. Is that anything equivalent to really letting good reporters ask questions? Are they all pre-screening? And I'm wondering, do they have to also submit their questions and stick to that? Did Trump ever say, I'm going to choose only this reporter, that reporter, because I know you'll be nice to me? No. He let them go after, and they did repeatedly. All right, we're going to get into that in great details. We also have so many issues going on today. In addition to that, we have Senator Tim Scott reminding us, Republican South Carolina, and of course he's a black man. He said, we continue to see constantly that this nation is, according to the Democrats and the progressives, racist, and they want to defund police constantly. He said, if you continue to defund police, you're going to have a recognition that the victims of these crimes, as everyone's solving or focusing on racial issues, the victims of most of these crimes are also black. The federal government, of course, is abdicating its responsibility to protect our border. That means U.S. citizens certainly living along the border are a direct threat in harm's way. Well, in Texas, Governor Abbott decided we will build our own wall. And he sent a letter to President Biden explaining, we want that land that you took from us by eminent domain to build the wall, and now it's not being built. We will build it. We'll take forward. And Lieutenant Colonel Alan West says this is great because, again, the government's abdicated its position. We're going to be joined also by Captain Brent Sadler, 26 years of the Navy, heritage expert on our naval abilities. And it is frightening what he has to say about what we're doing with our Navy, again, under the Biden White House. And Rita Moreno, West Side Story. She's taking flack because she dared stand up for someone, stand up in the face of the woke culture, and they will come and attack you. We've got all of that. Plus the development that happened today on our webpage. It was not a nefarious action. It was not a big shutdown conspiracy thing. But it does bear some closer examination. And the response from the public, I'll share with you. A lot to cover the next 2 hours. Stand by. Roll, ready, do it.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
For years, I've told you, be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. That's because I know the excellent work Wellington does when it comes to making your home, your business, even hospitals safe. See, recently I asked Wellington to check a relative's home. The relative had been constantly sick. Doctors couldn't find a cause. I asked Tom Wellington, please check the house. After extensive testing, Wellington could rule out mold and other air and water toxins. Well, that was a major relief, and the negative results gave doctors added information. So when I encourage you to call Wellington, I mean it. Wellington, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the Better Business Bureau, Missouri and Illinois. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
And run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
America is simply not a racist country. To deny that is to deny reality. Have we had issues with race, and is there racism in our country? Absolutely. But is the majority of Americans, is the nation as a whole a racist country? Undeniably, no. Look at the fact that I was elected in 2010 by winning a race in the birthplace of the Civil War against the son of the late Senator Strom Thurmond. That in and of itself should speak volumes about the Southern heart and the transformation that has been experienced in my great state as well as around the country.
Those are the words of Senator Tim Scott, Republican, South Carolina, a black man, and he's pointed out that, listen, there have been times in D.C. while a U.S. senator, and he still is, he gets stopped by police, he thinks sometimes because it's back to that DWB, driving while black. We have cases like that on a constant basis, and yes, they add fuel to the fact or the allegation that there is an entire systemic racism that exists within police forces, within the nation as a whole. But I would also, while acknowledging that we have these issues, and they need to be dealt with. We need to put an end to it. Police departments in many areas, either by local ordinance and or state and then sometimes federal, are being told, you know, you're going to have to start documenting who you're stopping and what condition and case and so forth, and looking for any racial correlation and to see if there's any value to that. While we do that, can we just admit what you heard Senator Tim Scott say? We have an issue here that we're not just a racist nation. You know, I look at some of these things that are coming out now, and I keep seeing and hearing them. And in the sense that we have so many out there that just want to continue to pound the drum. What's the value for them? Political points. Political points. Now, we all understand political points. We all understand that we definitely need to step forward and make sure that our bases are covered, because you got all these folks out there looking for a chance to rip into you if you misstate anything, especially on the great woke culture situation. But you think they would ever give any kind of answer at all to something like the country is not racist? Do you think? The other issue that Senator Scott is considering is that when we have folks always pushing that one mantra, that is it, the nation is racist, and every white person that exists today had a part in slavery of the past. That does nothing to unite the nation. Or are you going to start then pointing to every person of family historical lineage of Japan and say the 3-year-old Japanese child you see is responsible for bombing Pearl Harbor? Of course you can't, and you wouldn't, I hope. At some point you would have some logic and some consideration. Does that mean we stop trying to deal with race relations? Not at all. We continue to deal with them, just like we try to make this a more perfect union, and we're still in the process of doing so. But is there any other nation in the world where you can continually condemn leadership, police, and everything, and basically, they may not like it, but they're going to have to put up with it? What do you think? What do you think would happen? And you know the answer even before I get to the question. In North Korea, if some North Koreans decide to band together and say, this country is too dictatorial and we want to change, we want to be like America, well, you might hear from them one time, and then they would disappear. Same thing in China. Same thing in Iran. So while we have our flaws, we still have the freedoms, the liberties provided under our U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And yes, many of those contributing to the Bill of Rights and the Constitution signing off on it did own slaves. It wasn't right then. Not right now, obviously. But that's where you come up with this critical race theory that they're trying to shove into the schools right now. That the whole founding of the nation, the only reason the nation was founded, was to promote and continue slavery in a new world. Nope, it wasn't. But in some cases, you can't even argue against these people. But then here's Senator Scott with some more examples of how far the left and the progressives continue to push this line, and they hope you will follow.
Think about the fact that we had a two-term African-American president. We had a Secretary of State or two that were African-Americans, Condi Rice and Colin Powell. Think about the progress that we have seen in business, in entertainment, in politics along the racial lines. It is undeniable that America has made tremendous strides, especially in the last 4 decades. To deny that is, in fact, to deny reality.
Yeah, and that's what many are doing at this point. They are denying the reality. And, of course, in the midst of this, all this fits together with the plan to defund police. We've got crime breaking out on a consistent basis, and especially in areas where police have been kind of told to hold back, don't get too involved. And how would you like to be the officer on the beat that your job is to protect the citizens and the property? You have to think more than once, more than twice, more than three times, said, what am I going to do as I encounter a suspect? White, black, yellow, red won't make any difference. You're under a microscope. On one hand, that's good because we want high standards for our police, obviously. But defunding, what value is going to have that? What possible value would that have? Senator Tim Scott again. In the sense of looking at, you start talking about defunding police, you're going to have more issues.
If the Democrats keep fighting to defund the police, if they keep fighting to demonize the police, if they continue to disregard the actual necessity of law enforcement officers, you'll see Portland, New York, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, Minneapolis as classic examples of what happens when you demonize and disregard as well as defund the police. Violent crime spikes, murders spike, and every other negative principle and indicator all go in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a serious conversation about police reform, just remember the victims of these crimes, as everyone's focusing on solving a racial issue, the victims of these crimes are black too.
Yeah, but they don't want to really deal with that aspect of it. But we have heard from the black community in the polls saying, do not take our police out of the neighborhoods. We want more, not fewer. Most of those surveyed in every poll indicate we want police in the neighborhood. They know they need them. Now, they want good police. They don't want thugs dressed in police uniforms coming through. None of us do. But this rally cry to defund police is built upon the fact that all police officers, all of them, not only racist, yes, even if they're black, brown, or yellow, they are racist. Not only that, but they're mean and nasty and out of control. So what we do is just pull the money. Don't give them as much money. Put it into things like social programs and hire social workers to go into cases where a gun's not needed. Well, that would be fine if you knew you weren't going to face a situation where you might have a gun. Maybe we'll send a social worker. There's a domestic dispute. Often those are dealt with without any violence. Police officer goes in, separates the parties, talks to them, and one party packs up and leaves or whatever, and it's all done. It's many times it happens like that. But there are also those times where suddenly it goes violent in a hurry. And then sometimes while police are trying to deal with the person that supposedly is the attacker, the other spouse jumps in to start protecting the attacker and going after police as well. Let me share something with you from the Brookings Institute. Now, the Brookings Institute bills itself, say we are who we are. We're basically a nonprofit public policy organization based in D.C. Our mission to conduct in-depth research leading to new ideas for solving problems facing society, local, national, global level. Okay, you got that? Now, the Brookings Institute overall, even the Washington Post describes it as centrist and liberal. And in fact, in 77, Time magazine described it as the nation's preeminent liberal think tank. Newsweek said, well, it's more centrist. Politico says center left. Now, you've got a lot of terms there, but let me give you an idea of where they're going now that you have an understanding of what they say. They say there are seven myths about defunding the police that need to be debunked. And a couple of their contributors adding their remarks talking about how policing is a highly politicized idea, but there's seven myths we need to abolish. One, defund means abolish. That's a myth, they say. He said the truth is the movement seeks to demilitarize police department, reallocate funding to trained mental health workers and social workers to reduce unnecessary violent encounters. 13 cities in the U.S. have currently started such programs. Exactly what I was telling you. They're going to send in health workers to deal with some of these cases. Then another myth they say is defunding will lead to disorder. They say a misconception is police forces are what maintain order. They say the best tools are equality and education and infrastructure. Yeah, that'll go over really good in some of these neighborhoods. I would love for some of these Brookings Institute thinkers to go into some of these communities and spend a night and then a week and then a month and see if they weren't really concerned. And there's another myth. They say police protect the public from violence. They say that's not true either. Well, you don't believe police protect the public from violence at all? We'll take a break. When we come back, I'll give you that myth that they're trying to debunk and the rest of their seven myths about defunding the police that they say need to be debunked. You're not going to like it, but I've got it for you when we continue.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, so we left off. I was giving you all of these seven myths that the Brookings Institute, basically a liberal think tank, say that you need to strike because they are simply a myth. And myth three was police protect the public from violence. How do they justify that? They say, well, critics of the police movement assert we need heavily funded and armed police forces to protect the public from violent criminal elements. However, there isn't sufficient data to support that position. What the hell are they? These are thinkers. They are living in their own little bubble. They go on to say research shows that 70% of robberies, 66% of rapes, 47% aggravated assaults, 38% of murders go unsolved each year. Now, stop it right there. You do know police can't stop a robbery until it happens. Then they're called. Same thing, the rapes, aggravated assaults. And yes, many of them do go unsolved because witnesses won't talk. They live in the neighborhood. They're afraid what will happen. Witnesses disappear. But do not forget, you've got the liberals on the courts and in the prosecuting offices that say we're just not going to prosecute it anyway. So, yeah, there's no sense spending time on it. They're not going to prosecute. Oh, there's another myth. Myth number four, community programs won't work. They say that's a myth. Said that data supports the position that individuals that receive a quality education are less likely to become involved in the criminal justice system. Well, a community program does not necessarily mean they're educated, but they want to equate it to the same thing because it fits their thinking. They said education has long been viewed as a great equalizer. Well, I'm not going to argue that. I think it would be, obviously, it made a big difference. It makes a difference now. Those kids coming out of high school that could barely read, then that's a problem. Yes, they're going to have difficulties. And maybe the only thing they have to go to is a gang. Well, then you're going to need police. No, you probably won't. We can send a social worker to talk to them, you think? Oh, myth number five from the Brookings Institute. Most police work is focused on crime prevention. They say there's minimal evidence police surveillance results in any reduced crime or prevents crime. They don't understand. They don't understand when you have a patrol car going through the neighborhood that everybody takes notice. They say, have you ever been driving down the highway and there's a patrol car parked off to the side and you begin to ease up because you know you go a little fast and you get by and there's nobody in the car? They decide to park it out there just for that very purpose. And that's a simple little crime, not a violent crime at that point. Oh, myth six, police officers do not need college degrees. Yeah, here they're saying you've got to have a, says officers with only high school diplomas account for 75% of disciplinary problems. That has nothing to do with education. It has to do with their mindset and upbringing. But they, and here is the irony of that statement. If they're saying officers with only high school diplomas account for 75% of disciplinary problems, how about those in the criminal element? How many of them have only high school diplomas? Would that be why they're disciplinary problems as well? Well, it does tie back to education. Myth seven, defunding the police is a knee-jerk reaction with no research. Oh, they love this one. They say some opponents of cutting police budgets view this only as an emotional response to police conduct rather than a well-thought-out campaign. However, a study with 60 years of data indicates that increases in spending do not reduce crime. Well, it depends on where the money is spent, doesn't it? Better training for officers. And again, if you think better training is needed, if education is important, you could take the money out, then you can't provide better training. And you're going to get less qualified officers. You're getting whatever you can. And in some cases, they shouldn't be on a police force. But you gotta have the man, woman power out there to help. Or just don't have one at all. I'll go back to the remark that Senator Tim Scott said. If you're going to have a serious conversation about police reform, remember, victims of these crimes, as everyone's focusing on a racial issue, the victims of these crimes are also black. Brookings Institute, they're drinking some strange Kool-Aid in that place. Coming up, our naval ability to fight China and Russia. You're not going to like this. Stand by.
Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
When it comes to insects in the world, we are outnumbered. A University of Nebraska researcher estimates that there are 10 quintillion insects. That's a 10 with 18 zeros behind it. Now you know you need Rodler Pest Solutions. Here's another fact. When one insect gets in your home, more will come and spread and multiply your kitchen, your bathroom, your bedroom. Call Rottler Pest Solutions immediately. Rottler, family owned and operated for three generations. If you've never used Rottler, I encourage you to start now. If you haven't used Rottler recently, do it now. This is the season when the invasion starts. And remember, we're outnumbered. Get help. Call Rottler, 877-ROTTLER. 877-ROTTLER. Or check the website, Rottler.com. 877-ROTTLER, Rottler Pest Solutions.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Well, this has been one of those days we've had problems with the computer in the beginning and some of my websites. And I'm going to get in that in more detail the next hour and also some response from members of the audience. And I do appreciate them. And now we seem to have a difficulty reaching our next guest, but we're still working on it. We're looking at the Biden administration's budget dealing with the Navy. China has a rapidly growing fleet of over 360 warships. 360. Now, that's according to Captain Brent Sadler, who is the Heritage Senior Fellow for Naval Warfare and Advanced Technology. He put that statement in an op-ed for Defense One. Sadler had 26 years in the Navy, numerous operational tours, nuclear-powered subs, personnel staffs to senior Defense Department leaders, military diplomat in Asia, and his focus is maritime security and, of course, the technologies that shape our maritime forces, obviously, especially the Navy. By the way, he has spent a lot of time, I should say, on nuclear subs as well. He's looking at the shipbuilding itself, just looking at what we are or are not doing with shipbuilding under the Biden administration. He says that overall, the White House proposal to deal with the Navy is to cut the budget. $2 billion cut towards ship construction. Well, the Navy's already been struggling to meet the Obama goal that was supported by President Trump at that time, building a 355-ship fleet by 2034. That has been the plan. All right, we got a new number that came through. We're going to try this one. I'm going to send this to Quentin and let him see if he can get this number, because I assume the guest had to make a move, and things happen. You know, we all have to accept that when we're live radio while we try to pull up Captain Sadler. Quentin, you now have that new number I just sent you. But stop and think about that again. If China is adding to its fleet of already 360 warships, and we had a plan, again, you had to go back to Obama on that, that they were trying to send it to Obama. I mean, that he was trying to push forward. And apparently we're having trouble with that number, that it didn't show up. All right, let me try it again. Folks, bear with us. This is live radio. This is what we get. We're going to try this again. All right, it's the same number, and it's still not going through. All right, that didn't accomplish anything. So I apologize, folks. We'll go ahead to move on, and let me share some of this with you, because it is an interesting piece that we wanted to get into. Again, Obama was in favor of actually building our Navy up. So let's give him credit for that. And President Trump came in and said, yes, let's do that. The idea was to have a 355-ship fleet by 2034. We currently have 296 warships. We should have, at this point, 308. So any cut's going to put that rebuilding program deeper behind. But here's the other issue. We need the warships, but of course you also have to have the man-woman power on board. So as you build the warships, if you don't have the personnel to go on board, what good is it going to do you in the water? The answer would be nothing. So they're cutting, the White House budget under Biden-Harris is cutting manpower by 1,600. They say, according to Captain Sadler, to man a 355-ship fleet, you need 27,700 sailors. And yet they're going to cut them. And in some cases, they're cutting 15% on each ship. That leads to crew fatigue. And fatigue has been a contributing factor to a couple collisions that happened in 2017. Fatal collisions. If they're fatigued, they're not thinking clearly. You're out on the water. You are not gauging and judging your distances. You're not staying in touch. Somebody makes one little mistake, and suddenly you realize you're in the path of another warship or some commercial vehicle, and you can't just simply stop. You know you can't just stop a train on the tracks on a dime, and you certainly can't do it with a big ship in the water. Oh, you can take evasive measures, and they may or may not work, but you still have a situation where it just isn't going to save ships or lives. Then we have the issue of the training. And Captain Sandler, in his opinion column, had pointed out they are shrinking. They're shrinking the training, shrinking higher education, and even the entry-level programs, such as a reserve officer training, cutting about $390 million from that. And the key point is that within the proposed education and training budget, there's nothing, nothing in it that indicates how the Navy's going to go about building a better understanding of the China threat with less resources. We have some waters, obviously, that we have been battling with China, and I need to rephrase that. Now, not battling, but we're making it clear to China, these are not your territory. We're talking about the South China Sea area. Now, that involves islands and several sovereign states within the region. Brunei, Taiwan, Indonesia, Malaysia, Philippines, Vietnam. Something like $3.4 trillion worth of global trade passes through the South China Sea on a regular basis. That's 80% of China's energy and energy imports, 39 to 40% of China's total trade. Well, what we have seen, though, is that the People's Republic of China started putting some buildings and then aircraft on some of the islands along the way. Now, this has been underway for some decades. Vietnam had done it, the Philippines. China kind of late to start doing the island building effort, but they are rapidly moving forward. These actions in the South China Sea are, some are describing, as part of its salami slicing strategy. In other words, we're going to take a little slice here and a little slice there. No one will really pay attention. Well, we are paying attention. We made it very clear. And we have said, you try to stop traffic going through these areas, you're violating international standings. We've already had a few conflicts. We've had them continually get a little too close to our vessels. And do you think they're going to start easing up now with Biden in the White House? For that matter, what about Russia after the meeting Biden had with Putin? Do you think he said anything to them that gave them a clear definition of do not continue to get your fighter jets too close to our craft? And those are the main players we're facing. We're not even talking about some of the smaller countries, and like Iran might suddenly rush out and attack either a U.S. commercial vessel or one that we're trying to watch over. The Biden-Harris White House, they're operating in a dreamland. We can defund police, we can defund the military, and we're all going to be good. Everybody will be on their best behavior. All countries will all come together and sing Kumbaya, and everybody will be happy. Even some on the Democrat side, especially those who have served in the military, and there's a good value for that, they recognize you cannot protect this nation or your interests abroad or Americans abroad if you don't have a show of strength. If China's going to continue to push in more and more warships, at some point they're going to outnumber us, then what are we going to do then? Then you've got another crisis. How do you resolve it without losing lives? Well, then you're going to have what, discussions? Discussions and being really stern in their face while their ships are pushing your ships out of the way in the South China Sea? In the thinking of progressives, yeah, okay. And in fact, in the thinking of many of the progressives, it would be just fine for the U.S. Navy to be sunk. This is what we're dealing with. Coming up, we've got some decisions out of the Supreme Court. One of them involving Obamacare. Another one involving same-sex couples. Those rulings coming up. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That deaf, dumb, blind kid sure plays a mean pinball.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
All right, so the Supreme Court today tossing the Obamacare challenge by 18 states. Of course, those would be red states. They filed them challenging Obamacare. For a third time, the Supreme Court basically ducked the question of constitutionality, ruling that those challenging Obamacare lack the required legal standing to do so. The vote, 7-2. 7-2. Now, you might be interested in who among the Republican-nominated justices went with the 7. I'll give that to you in a moment. But we're challenging, or those states are challenging, the March 2010 law, Obamacare, that was enacted without a single Republican vote in Congress on final passage. Since then, insurance premiums skyrocketing. Many consumers can't afford the premiums. They lost their insurance in the beginning. Many companies just basically said that they were paying insurance for the employees. Said, no, you're going to have to do it now. So they just took a pay hike. A pay cut. Forbes wrote in a 2016 article, overwhelming evidence that Obamacare caused premiums to increase substantially. Justice Reed O'Connor, the Northern District of Texas, had ruled in 2018 that the Obamacare law was unconstitutional in its entirety. But he didn't do anything to stop it while it went through the appeals process. So the cases that were heard together, California v. Texas and Texas v. California, they had those arguments back then in 2020. And now they're ruling from the court on the most recent cases submitted to it in the majority opinion written by Justice Stephen Breyer, got joined by Chief Justice John Roberts, Clarence Thomas, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. Dissenting, Justice Alito wrote the dissenting opinion. Justice Neil Gorsuch joined him on it. Then we had a unanimous ruling from the justices siding with Catholic Social Services. This is very interesting, especially the fact that it's unanimous. A Catholic foster agency in a dispute against the city of Philadelphia over whether it should be banned from participating in the city's foster program because the Catholic foster agency excluded same-sex couples. And they say that's a violation of the First Amendment. Lawyers for Philadelphia said no, the Catholic Church Foster Social Services lacks a, quote, constitutional right to demand that the Department of Homeland Security, Department of Health and Security, should offer a contract that omits the same non-discrimination requirement that others have to follow. Let me make it as clean as I can, because sometimes when you start reading through these, it gets really complicated. In a 9-0 ruling, a unanimous ruling, the justices sided with the Catholic Foster Agency that it should be allowed to ban same-sex couples without being punished by the city. Chief Justice Roberts wrote the majority opinion for everyone, stating the refusal of Philadelphia to contract with the Catholic Social Services for the provision of foster care services unless it agrees to certify same-sex couples as foster parents cannot survive strict scrutiny and violates the First Amendment. Wow, that is a powerful statement coming from Roberts. It's a correct statement. It's a correct ruling. Oh, and he was joined by Justices Breyer, liberal, Sotomayor, liberal, Elena Kagan, then Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. In fact, Barrett herself also wrote a concurring opinion, which again was joined by Kavanaugh, partially by Breyer. She wrote, as the court's opinion today explains, the government contract at issue provides for individualized exemptions from its non-discrimination rule, thus triggering strict scrutiny. All nine justices agree the city cannot satisfy that standing. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, said that's all good. It's a great ruling. Could have gone farther. He said, I think the court is now going to look really closely anytime you have religious institutions or organizations that are being disfavored. If they are treated any worse or any differently than a secular institution, the court's going to strike that down. Well, based on this, I think Senator Hawley's right. Now, the question is, will that consensus hold? Coming up in the next hour, I want you to hear President Trump's evaluation of the meeting between Biden and Putin. You know, our guest we have on from time to time, Fred Flights with the Center for Security Policy, says basically in his wording, when it came to Biden in this meeting and what he did, the summit set back American security. We'll get into that. And also building a wall along the border of Texas.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.